Chapter 82. The radio was playing Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Elton John sang, "Maybe you'll get a replacement. There's plenty like me to be found. Mongrels who ain't got a penny, sniffing for tidbits like you." Music escalated and his voice rose. Ron thought about his class. He'd been reading Keats. He typed out a verse from Ode to a Nightingale and taped it over his desk on the wall. He wondered what Keats would have thought of the song. He wouldn't have known about the Wizard of Oz. Now the radio was playing Desperado, and Ron rode along on the sound of the vocal and its simple words. He wasn't getting any younger either. He was almost 24. Still didn't have a degree. Like it always was, the parking lot was packed. Ron searched up and down the long rows of cars and finally would end up rolling along next to a student who was on the way back to a car. The walk to the class was a long one, and Ron slung his book bag over his shoulder and moved quickly. He liked to move at a good pace, and especially liked blowing past people who were meandering. The class was on the top floor of a large square brick building. He settled into his desk and waited. The professor was a short, heavy-set man with very curly hair. His name was Grant Pritchard, and his reputation was for being a good history teacher, and it was accurate. The class waited while he set up the projector. Abraham Zapruder purchased a Bell & Howell Zoomatic camera in November of 1962. The camera was relatively new, and he didn't use it much. This was the original cartridge that came with the film. The first 25 feet of film were family shots that were taken out on his patio. Ron thought about the sheet that Rocky used to hang in their basement apartment so they could watch the videos that he took with his camera. Then he shoved those memories away like he always did. He told his family that he was bringing his camera to work that day so that he could film the president's motorcade. It was quite by chance that he was there, and the record that he made was a coincidence that has provided the most valid argument to date about the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. We're going to watch that film, which until recently has not been available to the public. Ron had seen the Zapruder film a few years ago in Quimpy's garage apartment. It was Quimpy who had first told him about an author named Mark Lane. Quimpy had told him about Harold Weisberg's Whitewash and Josiah Thompson's 6 Seconds in Dallas. Ron read all three books and knew where Grant Pritchard was going. At the time of the assassination, Zapruder screamed to his secretary, "They killed him! They killed him!" Later, he was heard saying, "I know he's dead. I saw his head explode like a firecracker. It's the worst thing that I have ever seen." Ron remembered the part of the film where Kennedy's head exploded and a flash could be seen coming from the front of his brain when the bullet struck. He wasn't sure that he ever wanted to see it again. Pritchard stopped speaking and ran the film. The classroom was dark and silent. When the bullet hit Kennedy, he heard gasps coming from his classmates. Pritchard stopped the film and then ran it back to the seconds after Kennedy's car emerged from back of a sign. He painstakingly went through each frame, showing Kennedy grabbing both hands to his throat. Jacqueline was reaching for him. He slumped against her shoulder, and then the shot blew his brains all over the back seat of the car and her. She tried to crawl out the back of the limousine, and a Secret Service agent climbed on the trunk of the car. The flowers that she had been carrying flew into the air. She fell onto the back seat of the floor of the car, which was now speeding off. "This is what truly happened to our president," said Pritchard. "Seeing this film makes it impossible to believe that the president was shot from the rear, where Oswald is said to have been. The question is why the government of the United States has kept the frames of the film a secret for the last 10 years, and why they covered up the assassination of the President of the United States." When the class was over, Ron stayed behind to talk with Pritchard. He told the professor about the books that he had read, and that how his friend had been researching the assassination for more than 8 years now. "Would you be interested in doing some work for the Assassination Information Bureau?" Ron thought about that. He was pursuing a degree in English. This wasn't going to have anything to do with that. He was going to have to think about supplementing his income now that he and Robin were getting rid of Hank. That was also going to take some time. But Ron found himself nodding and saying, "Yeah, I'd like that a lot. The more people that know, the better our chances of knowing what happened are going to be. There's a lot more information out there now than there was back in the 60s, said Pritchard. "I'd like you to familiarize yourself with some of it. There will be a meeting of those who are going to work with the Bureau this Saturday night at my house." Ron looked at the list of books that Pritchard had given to him. There was one by Sylvan Fox. There was a book by Jesse Curry, whose name and face Ron would never forget. It was entitled His Personal JFK File. The Assassination of JFK, The Reasons Why, a book was written by Albert E. Newman. A Citizen's Dossier, Mark Lane Responds to Defenders of the Warren Commission. Ron's eyes scanned the list. He didn't have time to read all of these. He wondered if he should forget this idea, go back to his literature and poetry, and the things that he had decided to do with his life.